Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and the Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on mind control, world control, right after this. You know, marriage is a state-licensed business. It's a three-party limited general partnership between you, your spouse, and the state. And like any other state-licensed enterprise, it's regulated by the Welfare Department, the Department of Family Services, and the Family Court. And the best part about it all is that you have no input into or say-so over the marriage, divorce, dissolution, custody, alimony, child support, protective custody, or restraining orders, and you get to pay for all of it, and if you fail to pay, you go to jail. Now, marriage is the most important and expensive contract that you can engage in. It's more binding, and it's more costly than your military enlistment or 30-year home mortgage, and you probably know a whole lot less about it than you do your military obligation or your house payments. 67% of all marriages here in the United States end in divorce, but whether you are a husband or wife, you do have rights, privileges, and immunities to advance, to protect, or defend against some breach in this marriage contract. And that's why you should know and understand the terms and conditions of that marriage contract before you marry. And you ought to be the person writing that contract instead of letting the state write it for you. Now, whether you're married or not, why don't you write for my free general law CD pack, or the package, the set, and let me share some vital information with you about the law and that marriage contract. Just call direct 417-273-4967. Remember, the four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School is entertaining, educational, it's informative, best of all, it's free. And if you're online, you can just go to the website, georgegordon.org, click on to the email, and send me an email request. Remember, that's a free four-hour compact disc package there, and it tells you about our eight schools and how they work and why they work that way. Just click on to the email machine, send me an email. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about mind control, world control. And among the basic studies consulted by the Rockefeller-funded scientists and others interested in social control of large populations at the beginning of the century were those of the official Prussian state psychologist William Wundt. Wundt was a professor of psychology at the University of Heidelberg. And it's fascinating that Wundt's grandfather is mentioned in the Illuminati provincial report from Utica, that's Heidelberg, of September 1782, as being the member known as Raphael. Now, during the period before Wundt's ascendancy in the field of psychology, and before it was considered to be simply enough, the study of the soul or the mind, it's called the psyche, Wundt was to change all of that in defining the propagandizing for the materialistic viewpoint that would disinform the work of successors like Pavlov and Skinner and Watson. Wundt took a chair in philosophy at the University of Leipzig in 1875 and established the world's first psychological laboratory, creating the psychological journal called Philosophical Studies, and then redefining psychology for this century. Wundt stated with characteristic modesty, he said, "The work which I here present to the public is an attempt to mark out a new domain in science." Wundt was to remain at the University of Leipzig until his death in 1920. Wundt's doctrine might be characterized as science meets the Hegelian Sturm und Drang, one of the primary underpinnings of the New World Order. And that primary underpinning is that its strategy for world conquest originates in the philosophy of Hegel. Now, Hegel was a professor of philosophy at the University of Berlin, and his work formed the basis for both Marxist dialectical materialism and fascist statism. Hegel's stated belief was that man is subordinate to the state and only finds fulfillment in the obedience to the dictates of the state. And as he said, the state is the absolute reality and the individual himself has objective existence, truth and morality only in this capacity as a member of the state. This philosophy can be and has been used for the justification of any number of atrocities committed upon the human race. And it provides an unexamined substratum to the philosophies of many politicians today. If only the omelet, the state, is important, what does it matter if we lose a few million eggs, humans, in the process of cooking up the dish? Hegel was the originator of the theory of the dialectic, the idea that conflict determines history. Now, according to Hegel, a force that he called a synthesis, or a thesis, dictates its own opposing force called the antithesis. These two forces in conflict result in the creation of a third force, which he termed a synthesis. Out of this synthesis, the process begins again. Marx later revised the theory of the dialectic, insisting that only material events were relevant, and that the dialectic was inherent in matter, thus divorcing the idea from metaphysics, at least to his own satisfaction. From the theory of the dialectic comes the realization that the creation of conflicts can create determined outcomes, or syntheses. Those who promote the New World Order again and again are seen to be using the theory of the Hegelian dialectic to bring it all about. They're manipulating events, creating conflicts, creating wars, and then destroying the lives of untold millions of people in the process. The New World Order is the desired synthesis of these controlling forces that are operant in the world today. Naturally, the Hegelian system goes completely against the grain of most people, and particularly the Bible, particularly here in the West, who view the individual as the true sovereign. Thus, the real enemies are not America versus the Soviets or the political left versus the political right, but those who would manipulate the yin and yang of history. To return to Wundt, Wundt, like Marx, maintained that unless a thing could be scientifically quantified, there was no point in considering it or including it as a factor in scientific investigation. All psychological studies should be based upon physiology, body reactions, said Wundt, and Wundt essentially redefined psychological studies of the brain and nervous system. And he redefined man as an animal without a soul, thus legitimizing, at least for his associates and their employers, the treating of man as a machine. This no doubt was a welcome rationalization for the controllers, who could now happily slaughter whoever they pleased without fear of ultimate spiritual retribution or accounting. Wundt said that it truly appears to be a useless waste of energy to keep returning to such aimless discussions about the nature of the psyche, which were in vogue for at least a while and practically still are, instead rather of applying one's energies where they will produce real results, he said. According to researcher Paoli Leoni, for Wundt, will was the direct result of the combination of perceived stimuli, not an independent individual intention as psychology and philosophy had, with some notable exceptions held up at least at that time. Wundt's rejection of the intangibles of life, such as soul, mind, and free will, have influenced psychiatry and psychology up to the present day. And now you know why shrinks look so weird and often have nervous tics. They have been taught that they do not have a soul. And according to one chronicler of the history of psychology, after Wundt's theories became popular, naturally Leipzig became the mecca of students who wished to study the new psychology, a psychology that was no longer a branch of speculative philosophy, no longer a fragment of the science of physiology, but a novel and daring and exciting attempt to study mental processes by the experimental and quantitative methods common to all of science. For the psychology of Leipzig was, in the 80s and 90s, the newest thing under the sun. It was the psychology for the bold young radicals who believed that the ways of the mind could be measured and treated experimentally, and who possibly thought of themselves in their private reflections as pioneers on the newest frontier of science, pushing its method into the reaches of experience that it had never before invaded. At any rate, they threw themselves into their tasks with industry and zest. They became trained introspectionists, and adding introspection to the resources of the physiological laboratories, they attempted the minute analysis of sensation and perception. They measured reaction times, following their problems into numerous and widespread ramifications. They investigated verbal reactions, thus extending their researches into the field of association. And they measured the span and the fluctuations of attention and noted some of its more complex features in the complication experiment, a laboratory method which was patterned after the situation that gave rise to the astronomer's problem of the personal equation. In their studies of feeling and emotion, they recorded pulse rates, breathing rates, and fluctuations in muscular strength, and in the same connection, they developed methods of recording systematically and treating statistically the impressions observed by introspection. And they also developed the psychological methods, and in addition made constant use of resources of the physiological laboratory. And throughout all of their endeavors, they were dominated by the conception of a psychology that should be scientific as opposed to speculative. And always they attempted to rely on exact observation, experimentation, and measurement. And finally, when they left Leipzig, the workers in laboratories of their own throughout the world, chiefly in America and in German universities, most of them retained enough of the Leipzig impress to teach a psychology that, whatever the subsequent development of the individual's thought, bore traces of the system which was recognized at Leipzig as orthodox. Now, the essence of Wundt's research was that man was a machine, albeit a soft one. Wundt also went along with the Hegelian axiom that man was simply a cog in the greater machine of the state. Was it just a coincidence that Wundt and his cohorts funded by and working with the Prussian military and political establishment, provided the justification for treating humanity as individual pieces of nearly valueless machinery to be tinkered with or destroyed at will. Wundt, along with other Hegelians, rejected the moral equation in dealing with mankind, thereby putting man in a test tube, and by doing so, opened the door to many of the atrocities that followed in this century, including the horrors of mind control. Now, another mainstay in the arsenal of elitist mind control research was the work of Ivan Pavlov, who studied physiology at Leipzig in 1884, 5 years after Wundt had a laboratory there, and first worked at the St. Petersburg Military Medical Academy in Russia. In 1906, Pavlov cut holes in dogs' cheeks and inserted tubes to measure salivation. A bell was rung just before food was given to the dogs, and after a period of time, it was observed that the ringing of the bell alone would increase the rate of the dog's salivation. The observation that responses could be so precisely conditioned was then brainstormed to apply to the mental processes of humans. And Pavlov's successors, the shrinks and social controller, have continued ringing their bells selectively, keeping us drooling ever since. Shortly after Pavlov was driving dogs crazy in Russia, John B. Watson at Johns Hopkins University, the Hegel hotbed for the United States, was doing the same thing to human experimentation. And Watson, the founder of what is known as the behaviorist school of psychology, but is really only research following in the dark shadow of Wundt, believed that complex forms of behavior could be programmed into humans. So he conducted one experiment in which a young boy, named Little Albert, was given a white rat to play with. Then after the boy became accustomed to the rat, Watson would beat on the floor with a steel bar every time the rat was brought in to the little boy. Now the boy was understandably terrified by such lunatic behavior, and eventually he reacted with terror every time the rat was given to him. And finally, whenever any small furry animal was around him, the little boy would just be terrified. Well, Dr. Watson himself drooled over the possibilities of this kind of mechanical conditioning of human beings. He said, "You give me the baby and I'll make that baby climb and use its hands in constructing buildings of stone or wood. I'll make it a thief, a gunman, or a dope fiend." The possibilities of shaping in any direction are almost endless. "Men are built, not born," he said. Watson later became a highly successful advertising executive, although there are no records available of what happened to little Albert. Now, in the late 1930s, Harvard psychologist Burris Frederick Skinner, an unapologetic student of Wundt's theories and a member of the U.S. Army intelligence, fine-tuned the art of human control into what he termed operant conditioning, becoming a guru to generations of mind-shapers that followed. His simple and very familiar by this time notion was that the reinforcement of a repeated negative stimulus, that is punishment, or positive stimulus, that is a reward, formed the basis for learned behavior. Skinner's early experiments produced pigeons that could dance, do figure eights, and play table tennis. Skinner's experiments didn't stop with pigeons. Skinner's most famous invention aimed at producing a socialized child was the environmentally controlled Skinner box, a crib-sized container into which he put scores of children, including his own. And his ultimate aim was not only to control the behavior of isolated persons, but to gain insights into how to control society as a whole. Not just individuals, but the whole of society. All of the nation of Canada, all of the nation of the United States, all of Mexico. And ultimately, the control of the entire world. Skinner's most explicit statement of his philosophy, ultimately one of world control, is contained in his book called Walden 2, written back in 1948. And the book describes a perfect communist utopia run along behaviorist lines. In Walden 2, society is run by Fraser. Fraser now is a straw man designed to dramatize Skinner's beliefs about human conditioning. Below Fraser in the pigeon pecking order are six planners, who in turn run managers, who are held responsible for the controlees. These controlees perform the mental tasks of daily life. Members of the Walden II Society follow a puritanical code of conduct. This code of conduct applies to virtually every aspect of day-to-day life, including the forbidding of midnight snacks. Education is a subset of human engineering, and children are turned over to the group by the parents. Just like we do today, we turn our children over to the schools and the teachers to be educated and trained, and that's where the mind control begins in school. Home is no place to raise children, Skinner said. And in the play, Fraser drawls, "Home is no place to raise children." His philosophy, one that has seemingly been adopted by many current-day shrinks and social workers. And we see that at work today. I'll just make a little comment right here, that we turn our children over to the public schools to be dumbed down, to be educated, to be controlled. Mind control begins in preschool. Then government controls the school, so government controls what you believe. If you've been to public school, you have been mind controlled. You've been programmed. I mentioned that to you last week, that what you believe in history about Christopher Columbus was put into your mind. It isn't something that you discovered, that you researched out. You went to public school, you read the books, and the books told you about Columbus. They told you about the Civil War. And this, after all, is what mind control is all about. It's persuading you to believe a lie. So last week I told you about lies that my teacher told me. Now, Americans, and indeed it's not just Americans, it's people all over the world, are mind controlled and mind conditioned in their public education system. Furthermore, even if you go to parochial school, your mind is being conditioned and programmed. The only way you can break this is to recognize in Revelation 12, verse 9, that the whole world has been deceived. Once you grasp this concept that you have been deceived, you can begin to do something to straighten out that deception. But until you reach that point in your life, I've been deceived, so, gee, now I need to find out what the truth is, then you can never be helped. Most people are mind-controlled. Most. That's 99.9%. There's a few people out here that think for themselves. But people that think for themselves and create and direct their lives are rare individuals. We call them iconoclasts. The government calls them terrorists, or they'll hang some label on them. They're antisocial, or there's something wrong with their deviant in some way. People who obey God and keep His commandments are called peculiar people in the Bible. They're called terrorists and antisocials in society. Well, the essence of Walden 2 is the application of this positive and negative reinforcement to create a smoothly running state, free of such unwanted encumbrances such as crime and freedom of choice. Skinner followed up his vision of Walden 2 in 1971 with his vastly hyped nonfiction book, Beyond Freedom and Dignity, awarded the honor of being the most important book of the year by the New York Times. What is needed is more control, not less, Skinner reminded us. Now, if you'll take a look at where we are today with such things as the Patriot Act and Homeland Security here in the United States, you see that we're embracing more government control, more direction by government. Down in Florida, as I speak, there's a Hurricane Francis. And Governor Jeb Bush ordered the people out. And then once he orders you out and you leave, then he won't let you go back to your homes until he gives you the okay, until your master tells you it's all right for you to go back. It's safe now. You see, 100 years ago, when a hurricane occurred in Florida, and there were hurricanes in Florida 100 years ago, a lot of people got killed, and people weren't told to evacuate, and they weren't told when to go back. People made their own choices. They decided to stay there. They decided to live in Florida. They decided to move out of Florida. They decided when they were going to evacuate and when they were going to go back. And the government and the state never came in to tell them what to do or how to do it. Today, the state not only generates that kind of instruction, it insists upon enforcing that instruction, and people have been mind-conditioned to accept that kind of control. We go to the airports today, and they search our bags. We don't think about our Fourth Amendment right to be secure in our person, houses, papers, and effects. After all, it's logical, and we need to be protected from terrorists. That's another part of mind control. Now, it may be revelatory that throughout his life, Skinner was interested in mechanical contraptions, even working for years on a perpetual motion machine, and his view of the composition of human beings was no less mechanical. It was a vision which characterizes the philosophies of most psychiatrists to this day. Psychiatrists are motivated by evolutionary philosophy, not a belief in or an obedience to God and His commandments. These and this atheistic, materialistic viewpoints, again, provides a justification for the atrocities which are daily committed in the name of science. And how can it be unethical to tinker with or even destroy a human being if, in fact, this human being is really nothing more than a machine? Not something created in the image of God to become a son of God, just a machine, it's just an animal to be manipulated. So with Skinner, the philosophy of psychosocial control was finally honed, and although many psychologists today insist that the behaviorist vision of a controlled world is crude and outdated, and that a docile society cannot be engineered by science, they protest too much. The behaviorist doctrine, forecast by Hegel, invented by Wundt, and fostered by a legion of his followers in science and education today, is firmly in place in the halls of academia and in the offices of population shaping and governments in the military worldwide, and are being applied at every level of society, not just in the United States, but everywhere in the world. The elite could not be happier if the whole world is placed in a Skinner box. Let me give you a demonstration. Let's take a look at cancer. Now, you're probably terrified of cancer. Most people aren't. In 1900, one person in 33, I believe it was, would come down with cancer in his lifetime. Today, it's one in two. And in 2020, that's just 16 years away, they tell us that one out of one, every person is going to at some point in his life come down with cancer. Now, the American Medical Association, the cancer curing agency, will tell you plainly that we do not know what causes cancer, and we do not have a cure, but we have a $100,000 treatment. Now, let's suppose that if I were a mechanic, and let's suppose that you brought your car into me to fix, and I said to you, now, I don't know what's wrong with your car, and I cannot fix it, but for $25 an hour, I'm going to work on your car until you run out of money. What would you say? You see, immediately your common sense would say, well, I haven't been mind conditioned to bring my car into mechanics that tell me plainly that they don't know what's wrong with it and can't fix it. But you have been mind conditioned to believe that, even though the American Medical Association doesn't know what causes cancer and can't cure it, if you had cancer, you would go to an allopathic medical doctor. And you would submit yourself to having your breasts cut off, your guts cut out, your limbs chopped off. Whatever it is that the doctor told you to do, you would do it because you've been mind conditioned to do that. It doesn't make any more sense to go to a medical doctor who tells you, I don't know what causes your malady and I don't know how to cure it, but pay me $100,000 and I'll treat it until you die. That doesn't make any sense, but people do it. And they do it because they're mind conditioned. And that's what mind control is all about. It's not a little chip that I'm going to put in your brain and control you like a little robotic car or like an airplane, and I'm going to push the button or twist the lever and make you go to the right or to the left. That's not what mind control is all about. Mind control is salesmanship. I'm going to sell you on an idea. I'm going to sell you on the idea of politics. I'm going to convince you that you should vote. I'm going to convince you that you should vote for George Bush or John Kerry. Now, if you think about it for a minute, why should you vote at all? It's an act of treason against God, who says you shall have no other gods before me, but you're encouraged to vote. Why? Who told you you should vote? Is it a conclusion that you came to, or is that something that you were taught and trained from the public education system, which is the hotbed of mind control? Adolf Hitler made an observation once. He said, you know, you give me a child until he's seven, and I'll make him a member of the state. Well, he stole that line from the Pope. It was the Pope that said, give me a child until he's seven, and he'll be a Catholic for life. Hang on, let's take a break right here. We'll be back with more on mind control right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Hey, if you're earning $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep about 41% of what you create and produce, and government gets 59%. That's about $20,000 for you, but $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just kind of real special? Now, if you think that your share isn't enough for you, then why don't you work twice as hard and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes just like you did this year. And you're going to net 24% and the government's going to net 76%. That means that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you're going to net $4,000 more, or 8% more net take-home pay than you did this year. That's guaranteed, by the way, by Congress and the IRS. You work twice as hard. Instead of making $20,000 more for you, you make $4,000, the government gets $16,000 of it. Now, that's why I contend that there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves in the top 5% of income earners and then only net 24% of it, don't you think? Now, why don't you call today and order my free 4-hour CD package and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information that answers many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is we pay so much for so little received. And let me teach you how to do just that in my Tax and Status School. It's now available on compact disc for adult homeschooling. To order your free general law CD package, all you have to do is call direct 417-273-4967 or go to the website georgegordon.org and click onto the email machine. Send me an email request for that free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. And remember, the Tax and Status School is also available on compact disc for adult homeschooling. If you can't come to school, we'll take the school to you. The number again, 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing a book here called Mind Control, World Control. It's written by a fellow by the name of Jim Keith, published by an underground printing company called Adventures Unlimited Press, One Adventure Place, Kempton, Illinois, 60946. Again, that's Adventures Unlimited Press, One Adventure Place, Kempton, Illinois, 60946. Second printing was in July of 1998. I imagine you could order this probably from Barnes & Noble, but it's an underground press book. It's because when you get into this kind of information, this kind of thing, you can't get Simon & Schuster or Bannon Books to publish it. And that's because the publishing companies are all controlled by the New World Order group, you know, the crew that runs the Committee of 300, the Bilderbergers, and Council on Foreign Relations, and so on. After all, we're talking about mind control. How do these people control what you read, hear, or know? And it's by controlling what you hear, or what you see, and what you know, or what you believe that you know, is the way that we control you. I showed you a portion of that last week by lies that my teacher told me. We control your view of the world and of history and of the future by lying to you about history. We make Christopher Columbus into a hero and Saddam Hussein into a villain, although Christopher Columbus killed more people than did Saddam Hussein. Now, mind control, then, is making you believe a lie. That's what we want to do. We want to make you believe a lie. All right, now let me tell you a little story. You know that, well, you've been told. We're not sure that you know this, but we know that you've been told that the Nazis were real bad guys. I mean, these guys are really bad guys. And they experimented on people, and they killed a lot of people, and they had medical experiments. And there was this guy named Mengele, and he just was terrible. He experimented on people, and he didn't have their permission, and they didn't know they were being experimented on. But we Americans, we don't do that. See, in America, we would never think about experimenting on people, especially large groups of people, you know, like the whole population of the United States. And America wouldn't poison the people of America, you know, with chlorine and fluoride in the water and things like that. Now, would we? And we'll listen to some of these. A history of secret human experimentation. Now, human experimentation has been going on all over the world. It goes on right now today, and I'm sure the Russians are experimenting on humans and probably the Germans, but has it been going on in the United States? Well, listen to this. In 1931, Dr. Cornelius Rhodes, under the auspices of the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Investigations, infects human subjects with cancer cells. He later goes on to establish the U.S. Army Biological Warfare Facilities in Bethesda, Maryland, then in Utah and in Panama, and is named to the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission. And while there, he begins a series of radiation exposure experiments on American soldiers and civilian hospital patients. That was Dr. Cornelius Rhodes, 1931. 1932, the Tuskegee syphilis study begins. 200 black men diagnosed with syphilis are never told of their illness. They're denied treatment, and instead, they're used as human guinea pigs in order to follow the progression and symptoms of the disease. They all subsequently died from syphilis, and their families never told that they could have been treated. 1935. This is called the pellagra incident. After millions of individuals die from pellagra over a span of two decades, the U.S. Public Health Service finally acts to stem the disease. The director of the agency admits that it had known for at least 20 years that pellagra is caused by a niacin deficiency, but failed to act since most of the deaths occurred within poverty-stricken black populations. That'll make you black people feel real good. Now, this is the second time. Now, notice how race comes in here. I mentioned that last week when we were talking about, you know, racism in history. And here is another example. In 1932, the Tuskegee syphilis study, and in 1935, the pellagra incident. After all, you blacks are just a bunch of machines out there. You'll notice that the underlying philosophy behind all of this is evolutionary philosophy. Now, evolutionary philosophy is a religion. Now, these evolutionary religionists have humanism as their religion, and they don't like Christianity or Buddhism or Muslims or Shintoists. They deny that there's any gods out there. They believe that man is God. If there's any gods out there, we're it. And they have adopted this philosophy, and this philosophy is based upon an evolutionary concept of the world and its origin. And they view people, men, no matter what their race, well, you know, if you're white, you're better off, but, you know, they're experimenting with whites also, as I'll show you here as we progress along, but especially if you're Chinese or you're Oriental or you're black or colored or something like that, you know, you're expendable. This is just like experimenting with rats and hamsters in the laboratory. And people in America are more concerned about rats and hamsters in the laboratory than they are on human experiments being done on more blacks in the South or Hispanics or Indians or somebody else. It's to those of us that believe God and obey God and keep his commandments and practice the scripture, and we practice thou shalt do no murder and thou shalt not steal. It's kind of a wild new concept, I'll grant you. But, you know, to those of us that believe that the Bible and God have relevance and meaning in the world today, and that human beings are created in the image of God and they ought to be treated like God intended them to be treated, we're a bunch of wild lunatic fanatics. Nobody believes that anymore. Not even the religious people believe that. Religious people, too, have been mind-controlled. They, too, believe in evolution. They do not believe in the 6 days of creation in Genesis 1, 2, and 3. And they don't believe in a worldwide flood. They believe the flood was local. And that's a part of mind control. Now, let's demonstrate that. Go read Genesis 1, 2, and 3, and then ask yourself, do you believe that? The answer is no, you don't. Now, go to Genesis 6, 7, 8, and 9, and read that, and then ask yourself, do you believe that flood was worldwide? And the answer is no, you don't. Now, the story tells you that the flood was worldwide, and the story tells you that God created the heavens and the earth in 6 days, but you don't believe that. Let me ask you this. Were you present at the time of the flood, and were you an eyewitness observer? Were you present at the creation of the heavens and the earth, and were you an eyewitness observer? Now, in both of those accounts, you have the eyewitness testimony of somebody who claims to be God. And he said, let me tell you what was there. I'm going to report to you what I saw, what I heard, and what I know. And you say, well, I don't believe that. That's a bunch of crap. But you believe Dan Rather, and you weren't present in Florida when Hurricane Francis came ashore. You believe Dan Rather and the accounts that are being reported to you from Iraq, and you weren't present. Well, that tells us that you've got more confidence in Dan Rather and the news media than you do in God Almighty. Why is that? Is it because Dan Rather is more credible than God? Well, in the minds of most people, the answer is absolutely. Dan Rather and any scientist wearing a white coat is more believable than God. We all know that, don't we? But where did you get that idea? Who told you that? Is that something that you derived from something that you saw, heard, or know? Something that you tasted, touched, smelled, felt, or saw? In 1940, 400 prisoners in Chicago were infected with malaria in order to study the effects of new and experimental drugs to combat the disease. Nazi doctors later on trial at Nuremberg cite this American study to defend their own actions during the Holocaust. What these Germans didn't understand is that they lost the war. History is written by the winners. Now, of course, if America had lost the war, we would have been putting on our doctors on trial for doing the same things that the Germans were doing. The thing that always amazes me is why is the pot calling the kettle black? Americans in America making the same kinds of experiments on human guinea pigs, that seems to be all right. But if the Germans do it, the Nazis do it, that's wicked, awful, terrible, and evil. You know, if Columbus cuts off Indians' hands, that's okay. But if Saddam Hussein does it, that's a terrible atrocity. I don't understand why cutting off somebody's hand isn't an atrocity, no matter what the guy, his religion, his color, or his political philosophies are. It's beyond me, but then I don't write these stories. I'm just reporting them to you. In 1942, Chemical Warfare Services begins mustard gas experiments on approximately 4,000 servicemen. Now, you soldiers, all of you servicemen who have served in the military, you wouldn't believe now for a minute, would you, that the United States Army would experiment on you soldiers? That's inconceivable, isn't it? The experiments continued until 1945 and were made use of, and they made use of, rather, Seventh-day Adventists who chose to become human guinea pigs rather than serve on active duty. Well, now, there's a case where these Seventh-day Adventists agreed to it. So I'm going to mark that one off and say, well, you know, after all, they volunteered. They volunteered rather than to go into the military. I don't know why they didn't say, I'm not going to serve in the military, and I'm not going to become a human guinea pig and use the temple of God's Holy Spirit for a military experiment. I don't know why these Adventists did that. I suppose that the primary reason was that they didn't want to go to jail. They didn't want to be inconvenienced by being put in jail because of their religious beliefs or something on that order. In 1943, in response to Japan's full-scale germ warfare program, the United States began research on biological weapons at Fort Detrick, Maryland. In 1944, the U.S. Navy used human subjects to test gas masks and clothing. Individuals were locked in a gas chamber and exposed to mustard gas and lewisite. Say, hang on. We'll take another break here, and we'll come right back with more on medical experiments in the United States right after this. Stand by. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Hey, are you concerned about your privacy? Well, how much does your government know about you, and how much do you want your government to know about you? Well, your government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself. And that's because everything that government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. That's right. The Fourth Amendment protects you when your person, houses, papers, and effects, but it doesn't protect you from yourself. Now, can we have privacy in the computer age? Well, you bet we can. And that's because information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. It's knowing how this information is gathered and what information is stored and what information you want to keep personal and private. It's those factors that actually put you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. So keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you have not revealed by your own hand or your own mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues and how to keep your personal business private, why don't you call and ask for my free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour program. It's entertaining, it's informative, it's educational, and best of all, it's free of charge. And all you have to do is call the school at area code 417-273-4967 to order yours. Again, that number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the webpage, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing a book called Mind Control, World Control. Jim Keith wrote the book. It's an underground press type of book. Well documented, though, as I pointed out in the last, last time, that the book is well footnoted and documented with its sources. So the guy's not just talking off the top of his head. He's got the names, the dates, the times, the places, facts, witnesses, and evidence to support his arguments. One of his arguments, one of his basic exposés here, is that the United States of America, psychology, the medical profession, the army, the political process, the political establishment, is experimenting on human beings. And they're experimenting on people because they believe that they're mere machines. They subscribe to humanist philosophy, evolutionary religion. And they're expositing that religion, practicing it every day, and they've taught us to accept it and believe in it also. I don't care whether you're a Catholic, Protestant, or Jew, you are a humanist. You believe in humanist philosophy. It's because you went to public school. You've been taught and trained that way. Now, maybe you say, no, that's not me. Okay, well, then take a look at Revelation 12, verse 9. It says the whole world has been deceived. And if you deny that, then you say, well, the whole world has been deceived except me. Gordon's deceived, but not me. Now, if at some point in your life you come to the conclusion, well, gee, if that includes me and I have been deceived, then everything that I hold dear and near and I hold between my ears is suspect, and I have to review that and prove whether or not that's true. It's why the scripture tells you that all Scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, reproof, correction, and instruction. All Scripture is given by inspiration of God. Nobody believes that today. They believe that there's a bunch of Hebrew writers, a bunch of long-bearded, long-haired weirdos, religious nuts and fruitcakes that wrote the Bible. That's what they believe. The Scripture tells you, no, that's not true. It says that there's a guy here named God the Creator. It's not his name, but then it's one of his titles. It's what we call him anyway. And he says, no, I wrote that. So it's a direct affidavit. Comes right straight from me. He said he swore to it because there was none higher to swear by than himself. He calls himself, I am that I am. All right, so that's a first-person quotation. And by the way, it meets the ancient documents rule, so it's admissible in the court as evidence under the ancient documents rule. It's over 30 years old. Now, I started in the last segment over here to read you some of these stories about a history of secret human experimentation here in the United States. Most Americans would look at this and say, oh, no, no, this can't be true. We don't experiment on humans in the United States. Well, listen to this. In 1945, a project called Project Paperclip was initiated, and the U.S. State Department, Army Intelligence, and the CIA recruited Nazi scientists and offered them immunity and secret identities in exchange for work on top-secret government projects here in the United States. In 1945, Program F was implemented by the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission, the AEC, and this is the most extensive U.S. study of the health effects of fluoride. Fluoride, you know, the stuff that you've got in your water, you drink it every day. And from about 1 year after you started drinking that fluoride, you've never been the same since, nor will you ever be again. Which was the key chemical component in atomic bomb production, one of the most toxic chemicals known to man, fluoride, and it's found, caused marked adverse effects to the central nervous system, but much of the information has been squelched in the name of national security because of fear of lawsuits that would undermine full-scale production of atomic bombs. And of course, it's still being squelched to this day, the fluoride put in your water. I think that plutonium is the most toxic substance known to man. This guy here said fluoride was. I'm not sure if it's fluoride or plutonium, but here are the two most toxic chemicals known to man, fluoride, and you put it in your drinking water. Now, do you really think that that's good for you? I mean, just being pragmatic about it. What if I was putting arsenic in your water? Would you say that was good for your strychnine or something? 1946, patients in VA hospitals are used as guinea pigs for medical experiments. In order to allay suspicions, the order to give, or is given, to change the word experiments to investigations or observations whenever reporting a medical study performed in one of the nation's veterans hospitals. So you go into the veterans hospital, and then you're being experimented on. Oh, I'm terribly sorry. That's politically incorrect. We're not experimenting on people anymore. We're investigating and observing people. 1947, Colonel E.E. Kirkpatrick of the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission issues a secret document. It was document 0707-5001, January 8, 1947, stating that the agency will begin administering intravenous doses of radioactive substances to human subjects. My God, I'm glad they were experimenting on human beings. We wouldn't want to experiment on rats, hamsters, and monkeys now, would we? Why is it that people believe that animals are sacred and people aren't? Where did you get that idea? Where do these ideas come from? Who sold us this idea? It's been sold. We already accept it. For instance, we now abort here in the United States. We call it murder. At least half of us do call it murder. I don't. It's passing your seed through the fire to Moloch. But we're practicing about 2.5 million abortions here in the United States, which is a capital felony according to God, and it's definitely prohibited conduct. We don't think anything at all about aborting 2.5 million human fetuses. But my God, could you imagine the outcry in this country if we did that to cows, dogs, cats, or animals? But who taught you that? And where did you get that idea? That's what mind control is all about. We sell you something that's patently false, fictitious, doesn't make any sense, is totally ludicrous, and yet you accept it as a part and parcel with every day. You know, it's just like mom taking the kids down to the soccer game. You know, 100 years ago, if you would have said to somebody on the street that we're going to use abortion as birth control, they'd have looked at you like you were a madman. If you'd have said in 1950 that we're going to experiment on humans because we hold rats, mice, guinea pigs, monkeys, and animals to a higher level of belief and need for protection than we do human beings, people looked at you like you're a nut. Today, in the year 2004, that's accepted dogma and doctrine. How did you change an entire society in just 54 years? How did you accomplish that? How did you turn abortion, which is a capital felony, into a birth control procedure in 54 years? Well, Columbus exterminated 1,100,000 people between 1493 or 1496, I guess it was, and 1555, in 59 years. Today we call that genocide and we say that's bad, but when Columbus was doing it, it seemed to be all right. Wasn't it? How do we get people to accept these kinds of oxymorons? It's insanity, but we believe it and we accept it and we practice it and we do it day in and day out. And that's what mind control is all about. Mind control is the process by which we sell you something that you don't need, can't use, shouldn't have, and don't want, but you buy it anyway. Americans do this. We're called a consumer economy, and we're out here buying things that we really don't need. But they appeal to our lust, and we've got five motivators, the five motivators of human nature: vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. And this isn't something that's going on, these human experiments, you know, isn't something that's going on back in the 1930s and 40s. Listen to this. In 1986, a report to Congress reveals that the U.S. government's current generation of biological agents includes modified viruses, naturally occurring toxins, and agents that are altered through genetic engineering to change immunological character and to prevent treatment by all existing vaccines. 1987, the Department of Defense admits that despite a treaty banning research and development of biological agents, it continues to operate research facilities at 127 facilities and universities around the nation. In 1990, more than 1,500 6-month-old black and Hispanic babies in Los Angeles are given an experimental measles vaccine that had never been licensed for use in the United States. The Center for Disease Control later admits that parents were never informed that the vaccine being injected into their children was experimental. In 1994, with a technique called gene tracking, Dr. Garth Nicholson at the MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas, discovers that many returning Desert Storm veterans are infected with an altered strain of Mycoplasma incognitus, a microbe commonly used in the production of biological weapons. Incorporated into its molecular structure is 40% of the HIV protein coat, indicating that it had been man-made. Well, that'll make you Gulf War veterans just ecstatic to know that you've been used as an experiment. Senator John D. Rockefeller issued a report revealing that for at least 50 years, the Department of Defense has used hundreds of thousands of military personnel in human experiments and for intentional exposure to dangerous substances. Materials included mustard, nerve gas, ionizing radiation, psychochemicals, hallucinogens, and drugs used during the Gulf War. How do you like that, boys and girls? I just thought I'd share that with you. Now, I know that it's incomprehensible and you can't believe it and you reject it. Your mind just says, that can't be true. Well, what in the hell are you telling me? That Senator John D. Rockefeller's a liar? And then that these reports that are documented with the report numbers on them are fictitious? I mean, come on, boys and girls. Mind control works. It's been working for 100 years and it works on you and it works on me. How do we get beyond mind control? We'll talk more about that next time when we come back. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Well, there's the signal. It says my time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, right here on The Law Hour, an editorial review. So until then, good night, friends.